Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home. Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home.
Welcome to the Free Birth Society podcast. This is a radical space for women who are ready to celebrate their autonomous choices in birth, motherhood, and beyond. Together, we'll learn about wild birth through personal narrative, we'll explore the politics of birth, and we'll analyze everything that relates to our lives as women from a feminist perspective. Here's your host, Emily Saldaya.
It's been a while, freedom child.
Hello, my friend.
Hey.
So as you know, we are here for you to tell a really big story. Not the happiest of ones. And I appreciate your willingness to share it in this way, in this public way. Because obviously you and I know, and probably many women listening know, that stories of loss in mainstream are... there's like nowhere for them.
Yeah.
There's like, right? There's like no home for them. And there's so much bizarre stigma and discomfort around loss, but also women who experience loss, which is part of your story now. Not one I think either of us ever thought you would have. And yet, here you are. I'm already going to cry.
I know.
I mean, I just love you so much. And it's been, yeah, from the outside, just really like intimate and powerful to watch you navigate this and blah, blah, blah. Enough about me. Let's talk about you. Where do you want to start? It's just such a big story, and I love you and your family. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. We love you too. I want to start because Lila Jewel is my daughter's name. Her story is big for me and like wide, right? So I think I want to start from the beginning when I felt her presence as a little spirit baby. So I've been on the podcast a couple of times. My birth with Elijah has been featured on this podcast, so you can always tune into that. Lila is my fourth child. So I had Violet many, many years ago. She's 16 now. And I have two little boys who were both pre-birthed. And then Lila was my third pre-birth. So anyway, shortly after Elijah was born, we already began to feel another baby that wanted in. And we felt it was a girl. And we got her name really quickly, Lila Jewel. And we were so sure that the girl would be next joining us. And we were like, okay, we want you, let's do this, but let's just wait a little bit. And then somehow Owen, my second boy, snuck in. And at just 9 months postpartum with Elijah, I became pregnant with Owen. And I was so sure that it was Lila. We were all so sure. So I just want to start there because I feel like that's actually when she came. She didn't come next for whatever reason. And yet she was there hovering. And even to the point where my friends picked up on it, so much so that one of my friends knew her name before I told her. And I told her I was pregnant with Owen. And then she just goes, "Is it Lila?" And I was like, "Wait, what? I never told you the name." She's like,
"What?
I don't know how to explain this. I just like, I felt the name as well." Yeah. So Lila's very magical and cosmic in her energy. And we always felt her like that. Anyway, fast forward many years after both of the boys were here. We kept feeling her kind of weave in and out, but it was sort of this feeling of, are we going to do it again? Are we not? Are we going to say yes? I'm getting older. Like the boys are starting to, because having the boys back to back was so intense.
You didn't sleep for like 5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, they were both really bad sleepers. Yeah, it was hard. And they fought from the beginning. No,
brutal.
I mean, they love each other to death, but they also fight. I mean, they're so close in age and they're just, yeah, brothers. So the energy is strong, intense. So we kept kind of, both my husband and I kept feeling like we had one foot in, out, kind of like, yeah, let's do this. And then we'd kind of pull back. So one magical night, I know exactly the night, we conceived Lila, and we didn't know it. And we thought we didn't, because we actually used, so I normally practice FAM, and I knew I was in my fertile zone, but I was like just barely entering into my fertile zone. And we used this all natural product that we had heard about from a friend, that's a natural spermicide. And it was the first time we ever used it, because we were super nervous about using this product.
Why? And
well, just because it's like, is this really going to work?
Yeah.
You know? And we read the paper over and over. And it said 2 in 1,000 women can get pregnant using this, you know, like, meaning it's even higher, better statistics than a condom. So anyway, or like as good. Right. And so we're like, well, when are we going to ever use it? We did the double dose that they recommended. And
like, wait, it was oral?
No. You
hit inside. Yeah. Sorry. Double dose threw me off.
Yeah, just like they say to use this certain amount, and we're like, let's just use two.
Squirt the whole tube up there. You may as well.
Right. You know, I want to mention this as part of my story, because I just find it really interesting that she slipped in. And I find it interesting now, looking back, I can see really clearly that I really wanted another baby. And I didn't fully claim that. You know, I feel like with my body and my spirit, I wanted another baby. And with my mind, I was like, well, I'm getting older. The boys are sleeping. Do we really want to do this? All the things, right? And I just feel like that with conception. There's always a mental reason to say no, you know? And so, yeah, I definitely have some regrets around that, of like, what would it have been like if I would have just said, I welcome you. You know, that's definitely a question I ponder. And especially being someone who teaches about conscious conception and works with women on this topic, I don't know. I just find it an interesting inquiry. Can I do anything about it? Of course not. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that in, because it's kind of an interesting part of my story. That night, I should have known. I literally felt the presence of so many spirits in my room, like just beings. And it was a very passionate night, you know. My husband was like, I haven't seen you like this in years. So it was a beautiful, I know I'm spilling some details here, but it was just a beautiful evening together. And so anyway, later I found out, no, sorry, this is a really important part of my story. So in between conceiving her and not knowing it, I have a dream. And the dream wakes me up in bed to the point where I sit up and I say out loud to Brandon, my husband, the embryo is damaged. And I woke him up with that. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I said, I don't know. It was just a really weird dream. And then I went back to sleep, because I didn't think I had conceived. Like, I had used the spermicide, you know, I didn't know. And then I miss my period, and I'm actually not one of those women who don't do the pregnancy test. And I'm like, I'm going immediately to get a pregnancy test, because my period is quite regular. So I do the test, I see the two lines, I fall in love immediately with this baby, because that's what we do. That's what I do anytime I see those two lines. And I'm like, we're having another baby. But then right after that, I thought of that dream, and I was very uneasy, because I have prophetic dreams. I am that type of person that I have dreams that come true. And I remember I wrote you about it, and I'm like, first of all, I'm pregnant, and we had the freak out, right? And then I was like, but I had this really weird dream. And, you know, I think you gave me some really good feedback that ultimately served me, which was like, don't pay much attention to that. Women have crazy dreams all the time that something's wrong with their baby. And like, it's probably totally fine. I'm like,
but
yeah.
Also, like, what are you supposed to do?
Exactly.
You're going to be like, oh my God, for however many months? Like, that's a terrible option.
Exactly. That's why it was good feedback. But this ran in the background a while.
Well, also, okay, sorry to be annoying, but like, yes, I know that so many women have really gnarly dreams about their babies and then birth normal, healthy, live babies.
Totally.
You know? And so this is that tricky, like, of course, in hindsight, we can apply this. But, you know, even in a less dramatic situation, women will dream about girls and then have boys, and women, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's like there is a lightness we have to hold around the dreams. And just like how women are like, I knew it was a boy or I knew it was a girl. It's like totally because you have a 50% chance of being right. I mean.
Yeah, totally. Right. And I've been wrong before because I thought my whole pregnancy that Owen was Lila. So it's like, okay. So I try to relax and, you know, move forward. My husband, our anniversary comes up and we decide to do kind of a little ceremony together around it. And I just started sobbing. Like, I've never cried before. Well, later I did after I lost her, but it was a very intense sob. And I'm like, I don't know why I'm crying. This is really weird. Like, I was just clearing out so much sorrow. And so I then said out loud, I'm thinking about that dream again. I can't really let this go. And so he said, let's go outside to where we have our altar, where we do our sacred fire ceremonies. We have a little altar with a Virgin Mary. And he said, let's go to our altar and let's light our candle. So once a year, we go on pilgrimage to a desert here with our elders, and we get these special candles and we put these ribbons on them. And the point of these candles, they accompany us through the pilgrimage, and then you can light them anytime you really need a strong prayer and let that candle burn down. So I was like, I'm lighting my candle from the pilgrimage and I'm going to pray about this baby because I really want to let this dream go and this feeling that something's wrong, you know? And so we lit the candle, we said a really strong prayer, and we just basically, the prayer was, if this baby is strong and healthy, we welcome you wholeheartedly to our family. We are so happy to receive you. And we have a big mission as a family. So like, if you're not strong and healthy, we trust that my body will release you. That was the prayer, and it felt really strong. And of course, when I was saying that, I felt that if something were to be quote unquote wrong, that my body would release the baby in the first trimester. Like, I'd have a miscarriage. So week 10 rolls around and I start bleeding. And I hear a voice at some point that says, Mom, I'm leaving. You'll understand later. Yeah. And I'm like, what is going on? I even felt my womb cramping. And so I sat with that and I was talking to Brandon, like, what's going on? I'm so confused. Am I having a miscarriage or not? Because at the same time, I felt like something was going on. I also felt like somehow everything was okay. And so he said, well, what would you ask your clients to do in this situation? Like, if you could coach yourself, what would you say? And I said, well, I'd probably just say, let's check in with the baby. So we both closed our eyes. We put my hands over my womb and we just felt. And I felt the energy of twins. I felt like this twin flame kind of energy of a boy and a girl. And I told him about it when I opened my eyes and he's like, that's interesting. I kind of could feel that too. And so I'm like, oh my God, maybe I'm carrying twins. Maybe I'm losing one and the other one's okay. I don't know. I had all this kind of stuff. I was laying in the grass at one point the next day and Elijah, my oldest son, put his hand on my belly and he said, oh, the baby's dead. Yeah. And I was like, what is going on? And it was just kind of driving me crazy, this feeling
My
of
God,
like
it's
my
hardcore.
actions. Yeah. And then he just kind of laughed and was like, huh, and like got up and kept playing,
Not
you know?
funny, man. Not
Yeah.
funny.
Yeah.
He's like five at this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hot.
I know. And so again, I'm like talking to my husband, like, oh, I can't like relax around this. And he's like, why don't you go see somebody, see an elder? Like, who do you like to talk to when you're just feeling confused? So I went to an elder of mine who's a very kind of psychic, intuitive woman. I hadn't even told her I was pregnant yet. I was showing really fast, and I felt like super pregnant from the very beginning, whatever that
Right.
means. It just felt really, really strong. So I think you could already even see. So when I walked into her room, she's like, "What are we working on?" I'm like, "Well, I haven't told you yet, but I'm actually pregnant." She's like, "I kind of thought so when I looked at you." And then she's like, "Okay, just lay down. Let's just see what happens." And because I just told her, "I'm just feeling uneasy and I want to see what comes up." I didn't say anything about the dream. I didn't say anything about the bleeding. And she just put her hands on and she said, "Is it possible that you could be carrying twins and you lost one?" And I was like, "Oh my God, this is crazy. I think you're right." And so then we started going into this whole session, and yeah, she kind of channeled some other things. And that piece relaxed me so much because I was like, okay, that was all it was. I was carrying twins. I lost one. The other one's okay. That's what the dream was about. That's sad and weird, but also I can move forward and trust this. So I continued to bleed, actually. However, I had also bled with Owen at the same
Yeah.
exact weeks, like
Did
10
you?
weeks.
Oh, that's interesting. Did you ever pass anything significant?
It was more like some small gushes, but I remember one point being in the kitchen and like, whoa, you know, a gush. And then some small kind of clots. Yeah. So it wasn't insignificant for sure. I was working with Kristen around it. I got some Chinese medicine herbs. And then at one point, and you know, I was doing like a quote unquote wild pregnancy. So I'm like, I'm not gonna, you know, and I kept tossing that around in my head. What am I gonna do? Who am I gonna go to? What are they really gonna do? Like, you're not gonna find a heartbeat this, or I'm not gonna do an ultrasound.
No.
So you know what I decided to do was actually to go into a random lab because I live in Mexico, for those who don't know. And there's labs on like every corner, and it's no big deal. You don't have to have a doctor or any kind of thing. And I just went in and I was like, I want to test my HCG levels. And I just want to see if they're high because I really wanted to know, am I miscarrying? Because I had these two kind of waves, like everything's okay and something's weird, you know? So I'm like, which one am I going to lean into? So I
Yeah.
decided that's the test I'm going to do. I can interpret those on my own anyway. I did. They were high. I ran it by Kristen. She's like, yeah, they're high. I'm like, okay, I'm not miscarrying. I'm just bleeding. I need to relax. Like, I need to rest. I need to nourish.
From when to when did you release blood in your pregnancy?
10 to 11 weeks. It was a solid week, maybe even 10
Oh,
days.
and just 1 week? Okay. I thought for some reason it was intermittent
No,
throughout, but no, just one.
I'm quite sure it was around 7 to 10 days in
Yeah.
and out.
Okay.
Yeah. Something interesting that I'll kind of backtracking. I remember I bled actually right around when I was supposed to get my period, which made me think I wasn't pregnant. Like I was, oh, I'm just getting my period. But I actually was pregnant. And then later that, I don't know, that bleeding came back. So I'm not really sure what
And do
all
you
that was.
think that was implantation bleeding?
Could have been. It was after lovemaking, so it could have been like cervix. I don't know, you know. So here I am, week 11-ish, and I'm like, okay, I'm not having a miscarriage according to my levels. Let's keep going. Let's remember the prayer and lean into that prayer, you
Yeah,
know?
what else are you gonna do?
Yeah, what else am I gonna do? So I kept going. I kept feeling very pregnant and just feeling big. And I kept being like, am I having twins or not? And I was like listening to all the twin pre-birth stories that you have on your podcast just in case. But yeah, ultimately, I just leaned into trust after that. And I really started to really, really enjoy the pregnancy. And I felt her presence so beautiful. I did feel like it was a girl, but I was also kind of nervous to get really attached to that because I was so excited about having another girl. I have one older girl who's 16. So I was like,
right. Oh. And after having two boys,
yeah,
it's like, obviously you'd want a girl, but you have to be prepared for another boy, which three boys is
so
holy
intense.
Guacamole. Yeah.
So intense, the energy of the boys together. So yeah, I was just feeling her. I did some beautiful trips during that pregnancy. We went to the desert again. We went to the ocean, beautiful ceremonies. It was a really sweet time, actually. The very last bit of my pregnancy, I went to Matriarch Rising Festival and was part of the priestess council. It's what we called ourselves, right? Led a lot of ceremonies and classes with Kristen and all of you. And little did I know, that was like my last week of pregnancy with her. So crazy.
When a woman wants sovereign support, it can seem impossible to find. Where are the midwives, the birth photographers, the chiropractors, the childbirth educators, and the healers that really get it? Well, we are all finally in one place. I'd like to introduce the Matrabirth Directory, Free Birth Society's newest offering to support the birth liberation movement. It's the first of its kind. Do you serve women? Get listed. Do you want support? Become a member. We envision a world where networking the sovereign birth paradigm is easy and abundant for all. Join us. Just go to www.matrabirthdirectory.com. When you need guidance from someone you can truly trust, someone who aligns with your values of sovereignty and natural living, look no further than Dr. Jennifer Tice. Dr. Jen's expertise in homeopathy and naturopathic family care is unmatched. She is my personal go-to when I need an opinion on how to best support my family and myself when we are healing. And something I'm always telling everyone about, Dr. Jen runs a very specific food intolerance test. Having this information has quite literally changed my life once I decided to take it seriously. Knowing what our specific foods were to avoid has radically improved the health of myself and my children. So if you're looking to uplevel your health, head over to drjennifertice.com and you can find her on Instagram at Dr. Jennifer Tice.
I felt so good. I felt so good at that festival. I felt so vibrant and strong. One thing I did feel, which is worth mentioning now that like I know what happened, is that I felt very, very wet all the time in that last month. And I kept saying like, God, I'm so wet all the time. And I was just like, oh, it's a girl, you know, I don't know. I'm just like really juicy. I was very sensual as well. And so I didn't really think much of it. But now looking back, I kind of wonder if I was already leaking a little bit of amniotic fluid.
Don't you think?
I'm quite sure I was. I'm quite sure I was at the festival. And when I got on the plane to go, my first flight was to Houston. And I had a layover there. When I got off the plane in Houston, I felt like the baby had totally switched positions and I felt a lot of pressure on my bladder. And I actually went to the bathroom and I couldn't make it to the bathroom in time. Like I kind of peed my pants. I kind of wonder if there was even some amniotic fluid there because It was a weird sensation. It was like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, I can't hold this in. Mm-hmm. And that was very unusual. However, I had pelvic floor issues after Owen. I had a bladder prolapse. And so in my mind was like, oh gosh. And I did tons of work on that to heal it. But in my mind was like, oh gosh, maybe I have the bladder prolapse again. Maybe that's what this is. There were just so many ways I could spin it, you know, which was like, it's not amniotic fluid. Yeah. I never thought it was. So I do the festival again. I'm like, whoa, my vulva is really like, I don't know. There was like this ache in it and sort of this juicy, wet feeling. She felt really low. Like, of course, looking back, I can see like, hello, you were actually entering into your birth portal and didn't even realize it.
Well, also, I don't think you've said this yet, but you're 27 weeks.
I'm 26.
You're 26 at the festival. Yeah.
26 weeks. So, I mean, of course I'm not expecting birth to be imminent. And of course I'm just going, oh, she switched positions. She's sitting on my bladder. Maybe I have a little whatever, all the things, right? I had a wonderful, amazing, expansive, beautiful time at the festival. And the next part of the journey, so we decided as a family to take advantage of being in the US and go visit our families. My brother had never even met my boys, and they're 5 and 4 at this point, because we just actually never go to the US. Everybody kind of always comes here. So of course my parents had met them, but all of my other relatives hadn't met them yet. So I was like, I'm going to be so close. I have to do a layover in Houston anyway. Let's just go. So my husband and my boys traveled to meet me in around Houston where my parents live. And I went to my parents directly after the festival. I had 3 days alone with my parents before my husband and the boys came. And during those days, I felt really good. I kept feeling really vibrant. But I noticed I was leaking something at some point, or like something was just a bit weird. I was also having a bunch of restless leg syndrome at night, like crazy. And I remember getting that at the very end of my pregnancy with Owen. And I'm like, okay, I just need to take magnesium and like all the things, right? I took such good care of myself in Lila's pregnancy though. I really did like watch all my minerals and whatever, protein and blah, blah, blah. So, I started noticing like, I really think I'm getting prolapse and I'm just not really able to control my bladder. Because I'm just kind of leaking a little bit here and there. Never did it occur to me that it could have been the amniotic fluid until the night before I ended up giving birth to her. So anyway, a couple of days pass. I spend time with my parents. I'm going to the gym with my mom the day before she's born, swimming laps, working out, feeling great, like just having a great time with just my mom and I, you know? And then on Saturday, June 29th, my husband and the boys came in. That night before, every time I would turn in bed, like and switch positions, I would have a little small gush. And I was just like, something's weird.
Yeah, that's not normal.
Yeah. So that morning, Saturday, when we were going to pick them up, I asked my mom, I think I need to get some pH strips from the pharmacy because I can test to see if this is urine or amniotic fluid. So she did. We went and picked them up. As soon as I got back to their house, I tested, and sure enough, it was amniotic fluid. And I'm like, okay, what am I going to do with this information? So I'm writing you, I'm writing Kristen, I'm writing my elder midwife here in my town, she's a retired midwife, but she's just one of my friends and teachers and just amazing, amazing woman. And, you know, it's like, well, everybody kind of said the same. It's like, well, if you go to the hospital, here's what they have to offer you. Or we can see if your bags can seal, which they do. Bags can seal. So I'm just automatically going there. Like my bag is going to seal. This is no big deal. I'm definitely not giving birth right now. Like this is insane. I'm visiting my family in Texas. Why would I be giving birth here? It's okay. I'm just going to go on complete kind of bed rest. I'm going to take high amounts of vitamin C and magnesium. I don't want what the hospital's offering me. Like that's what felt really clear. Meanwhile,
I just want to point out here that, you know, this is just an example for our sisters to feel fear and still stay home. You know, yeah. Like it's not like this didn't freak you out. It's not like you weren't like, oh shit, like this is scary. It is scary. It is confusing. There isn't like a clear thing to do. And you're also not new to birth, the system, options. You obviously have good allies as well. But, you know, I think as we know, so many women at the first whiff of anything feeling off or wrong, kind of all bets are off and they're running to the hospital. And and, you know, obviously do whatever you want, but just so many of those women wind up regretting it. And so I think your story is a good example of slow down, think it out, collect your information, figure out what if anything, the medical system has to offer, make sure you really want it, and just, you can feel afraid and still take a minute and figure out your plan.
Totally. Yeah. And I do want to back up a minute because this is also important. She stopped moving a lot in those last 2 days. And, you know, again, my mind doesn't, I am a person that generally speaking trusts life, and I've trained myself to trust.
Yeah, exactly.
And trust the natural intelligence of life. And so I'm automatically going to, she's fine. And then I would kind of like push on my belly a little, like, hey, are you in there? When I felt like, God, I haven't felt her move. And then she would move. So I'm like, she's okay, you know? But now, of course, knowing what happened, I can see there were like various signs.
Yeah.
But I was just in a pretty good headspace that I didn't really think much of it. However, that morning, that Saturday that she ended up being born, I did look in the mirror and I was like, my belly's different. Something's off. And in the morning, my mom was like, are you okay? You seem really off. Like, do you, I don't know. It was like, there was a weird energy. We were supposed to have a family barbecue that day. And all these people were going to come over. And my dad, he's like a master griller. He had taken out this chicken and it was like completely rotten. It was so weird. Like, I'm sorry to mention that. It's just like an odd, like the morning was off. Like the energy was just, something was saying, something's going on. And we were like, dude, you got to throw that chicken away. Like it's bad. It was just a strange energy. Anyway, meanwhile, I'm processing this, like my waters. And then I'm receiving my sons who I haven't seen in like 9 days, which is the longest I've ever gone away from them because I was at the festival without them. And my husband and like all this excitement of them meeting their uncle and aunts and, you know, the cousins. And I'm like, what am I going to do? So I decide I'm just going to rest. I tell Brandon what's happening. I basically tell him babies of this gestation don't survive, like without a lot of intervention, you know? And he's like, okay, you know, and I think it was just really shocking for him. And then my mom's processing that it is amniotic fluid. And then she eventually tells my dad is very, very, very medically minded. And so of course, the first thing he asked me is, do you want me to take you to the hospital? And I was just like, no. And, you know, so much of this was just very intuitively guided is all I can say. I think by that point, Emily, I had started to slowly leave my body in some way. Because I think there was a part of me, I know there was a part of me that was in extreme shock and denial of what was happening. And I'm just telling myself the waters are going to seal. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
And she wasn't moving much, but I'm like, are
you weren't having contractions yet?
Wasn't having contractions at all.
Yeah.
I felt totally normal in a lot of ways. Her movements had for sure slowed down, but I'm like, are you in there? You know, and she would move back. So it's like, okay, you're in there. Okay. And so, you know, I'm just laying down. I'm kicking up my feet. My parents are trying to tend to the boys with Brandon and take them to meet their uncle for the first time. And it's just so strange. Weird thing is too, my brother has twins and his wife had premature rupture of her waters. This was when it was much, she was much further along in the pregnancy, like 32 weeks. But they ended up going through this whole very intense NICU stay. So when my mom went over to my brother's house, she told him what happened. And he was like, the baby's going to be born tonight. Like he just knew. And my mom, for some reason, I think she was trying to lean into my feeling. And she was like, no, like she's going to be okay. You know? So anyway, around 9 o'clock p.m. rolls around, and like sort of in the meantime, I'm just laying down, but I'm also like on my phone, like looking up stuff around this and like, what can I be taking anything else? I was looking up some homeopathy, and I'm totally out of my element. I'm staying in my parents' guest room, supposed to be passing through for a week, and I don't have any of my stuff, you know, I don't have my homeopathic stuff, or yeah, I don't have any of my stuff. Or my bed. And it was just so super disorienting. And I think in that time, I think really my higher self, together with Lila, we did this dance of like really trying to protect myself and us and this journey we were supposed to be on by really having me go into a bit of that denial and shock. I started to then have sensations, and I had been messaging you a bit, and I was like, you know, I had to look back on these texts to even like remember what happened. And I did it. And you're like, okay, shit. Does it feel like labor? And I'm like, it does. And I'm kind of surprised I even wrote that, because I continued, Emily, to be in such extreme denial of what was going on. I was like, these are just, you know, small practice cramps. Like, that can happen.
Sure.
I only had one the entirety of the labor that was actually painful. The rest were like totally not even painful. Meanwhile, my mom is like putting the boys to bed. Brandon's trying to ask me, what do you want to do, Nancy? Like, what do you want to do? And I'm like getting so annoyed with him, going, why is he asking me this? What am I going to do? Why is he, what is he talking about? I'm just going to rest and I'm going to go to bed. That's what I'm going to do. You know, I
And
was.
he meant, do you want to go to the hospital?
And
Because
he.
we texted about, I remember texting about that the night you gave birth. Like, what would they do there? What could they offer you? I mean, a part of you was in denial, but a part of you was also like
Research.
thinking things
Yeah.
out for sure.
I know. It's really interesting because I was gathering all the information. Brandon's going, is there, could there be an RBK in Houston that we could contact? I'm like, Brandon, RBKs can't do shit in this situation except for witness me. Like, there is nothing to do. So I was very clear in that way. Like you're saying, I said, there's nothing to do for a baby of this gestation except go to the hospital and get a bunch of interventions or give birth here and know that they're going to die if they're not already. And he was like, oh, okay. And then he went into his own kind of calculation of risk assessment. And he arrived very quickly in his own way of, I'm not going to the hospital. That's not our path. That's not our route. That is, and he's like, that is not for my wife. Like he's like, I couldn't picture you sitting in a NICU for 3 months and not being like actually severely traumatized, you know?
Well, of course you would be severely traumatized. I mean, does any woman get out of that situation untraumatized?
I don't think so.
But it's not like, it's not the, I don't know how to say it, like, it's not the energetic field of your family. It's not
No,
in
no.
keeping with who you are and how you live, which is a very sensitive, complicated conversation to have, especially in a public arena, you know, because it could, out of context could, yeah, sound really bizarre. But
But
you
you know
wouldn't,
what? I
yeah,
don't
what?
really care anymore.
Yeah.
There's something about losing a child that makes you pretty fearless, because you've faced the biggest fear. And so at first I was like, oh God, like I can't talk about this at all. And now I'm just like, yeah, no, like I can talk about this. That wasn't for us. And it's okay if it's for you. And if it was for you and that was your path, like it was for my brother. I mean, I am not
Yeah, of
here to
course.
judge any of that, but I am here to like walk my truth, you
Yeah.
know? And my truth was remembering my prayer, remembering how I lit my candle and let it burn down while I asked very sincerely to life. I said very clearly, I stated what I wanted. If my baby is healthy and strong, may she or he come. And if not, I trust that my body will take care of it. And of course, I didn't think my body would be quote unquote taking care of it at 6 months, 27 weeks gestation. So it was all very shocking and disorienting, and especially to have it happen outside of my own home. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to keep going with the story. So Brandon is doing this kind of assessment in his own head. He's arriving to the place of like, I'm not leaving. My parents' house is 30 minutes from the hospital. They actually live really like out in the country. I start doing my own kind of thinking like, okay, it seems like I am in labor, even though I was still in denial to some degree. What would even happen if I were to go? You know, what would they give me? What if Lila was brain dead for a while? And then I tried to like save her. And then I had a child who needed care around the clock for the rest of her life. This is not it. I'm giving birth here. And my baby's going to die if she's not. Like, I actually said that, you know, and in that moment, it was so clear. And I felt peace. I did. And so I told Brandon that, and he was like, okay. And I think he actually wanted that too, but he didn't want me to be resentful. And that's why he kept asking me, what do you want to do? Are you okay with this? And I was kind of annoyed that he was like asking me, because I'm in labor by that point. I'm in labor, denying that I'm in labor, but having these, my uterus is so efficient when I go into labor. I have such fast births with the boys I did. Owen was like 45 minutes. So I don't know. I was just having these back-to-back sensations suddenly. And, you know, I had messaged my elder midwife here as well. And it was just the same. She's like, well, what are they going to do for you there? Do you really want that? You know? So I'm like, okay, I know what we're doing. I go into the bathroom and, you know, I'm still in denial. It was so weird. It was like these two tracks, like the track of like, I know what's happening and we're not going to the hospital and this is what's going to happen. And the other track of like, I am not going into labor yet. And I think
it might be helpful to women who are new to a lot of this to maybe just articulate when you're saying, I know what they would do there. What are you talking about? What do you know that they would do that you were saying no to or that you were uninterested in?
Okay. So I'd go in, they'd first give me a steroid shot to develop the baby's lungs.
If there was time. Yeah.
If there were time, they would probably give me some kind of shot to try to stop labor. Although at that point, it may have been too late anyway, because I was already having sensations. And then, of course, they would like prep the NICU. My baby would be immediately taken away from me. No thought asked, like cord cut, whisked away. And they would try to be bringing her back to life in whatever way, that tubes down inside.
Oh, yeah. And all feeding tube, everything. Yeah.
And then it would be a minimum of 2.5 months at that gestation stay, maybe three, probably depending more on her state. You know,
she'd also, side note, be given all the vaccinations and you wouldn't be able to almost ever touch her.
Exactly.
That's no milk.
Yeah, like you'd have to pump and like it would be a whole thing. And that's also where my husband's mind went for sure, was like, I would lose my baby to the state, essentially. Even if she were to survive past that.
And that's what's the crazy part, of course, is that going there, it's not like there's some guarantee that your baby would survive on all this on all of this technology. And what is never talked about anywhere is how many babies die in the NICU and how many babies don't survive in the hospital system. And we know that the accepted social narrative is if they die in the hospital, if they die in the NICU, at least they were provided all the possible technology for this baby to survive, except we don't see it that way. It's actually the opposite. And I'm not denying that there aren't some life-saving measures in technology in the NICU. Of course there are. And of course some babies that are on that stuff do survive and wind up thriving. Like, yes, totally. And we'll never actually have a one-for-one of if those babies could have survived on their own. Like, right. We'll never have a parallel reality there. So that's something we have to hold in all ways, because this is where it gets so interesting, because your choice to not go, part of it was to claim her birth. And you knew that if you went, perhaps there's a slight possibility that after NICU hell, she could survive. Like, yeah, that is possible. And that's something you have to walk with. It's possible, because in a parallel universe, we could make up anything as possible. It is possible that that could have happened. And it would have meant absolute surrender of your birth, first moments, birthing her your way. I mean, I'll let you kind of take it from there. But there's, I think it's important that we articulate that part, because you can, if you don't know a lot about this, you can hear a story like this and the choice to stay home as really like strange, you know, like why wouldn't you go if there's a slight possibility? But in following that track, it is to also commit yourself to not having, I'm not articulating this as well as I want, but like to not having her.
Let's just be real. Yeah. And say that if we went that other route, we would be committed to trauma. I'm sorry if that sounds harsh, but I actually think that most NICU parents would agree with that.
Totally. I think the argument would, of course, be like, well, I would take trauma with a live baby. For, obviously. Right.
Yes, exactly. And I don't think, for me, it's like tit for tat in that way. Or like, you know,
this is my point, is there's multiple parallel realities. We can never say that Lila would have survived. We can say that it's possible, just like a NICU baby that, you know, in reverse, a NICU baby that winds up living, who knows, she could have lived without transferring. We have to hold those.
But anyway. Right. Yeah.
So ultimately you get clear, and Brandon, in your own ways and together, this is not our route. And we understand that we are then closing off the slight possibility of technology keeping her alive.
Totally.
Yeah.
And we go to the guest bathroom together, and I'm like, I start saying all this stuff, like, which is so ridiculous in retrospect, but I'm like, I'm banishing this from my reality. This is not happening. I'm going to sleep now. I'm just going to go to bed and rest. And this is all going to be, oh, you know, so there is that part of me for sure that's in denial. Sure. And I'm
not like, just in denial, but that doesn't want this.
Of course.
Like, that's so fair. You just don't want this.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, I have to just go to the bathroom. That's all. And I go to the bathroom and I stick my hand inside of me and her head's right there. And I'm like pacing the bathroom floor. And Brandon just kind of grabs me at one point, like by the shoulders, and looks me in the eyes. And he's like, Nancy, this is happening. And I know that you know how to surrender. Something to that effect. And it was in that moment that I realized, like, oh, this is my birth with this baby. Mm. What did I want for that birth? What was I calling in? I was calling in pleasure. I was calling in oceanic kind of energy. I could feel it in the colors of her, purples and pinks and turquoise kind of energy. And so in that moment, I really aligned all my bodies, you know, and I was like, okay, we're doing this. And I get on all fours in the bathtub, which had like no water in it because there was no time to fill up a bathtub. And she starts coming down and I start singing that mantra, Alexa by Alexa Sunshine Rose, which is, I release control and surrender to the flow of love that will heal me. And we sang that at the festival a number of times. And I just repeated it over and over as she was coming out. And she was born, and it didn't hurt at all. It was super simple, straightforward, gentle. Like, it wasn't this like cosmic ecstatic pleasure. It was more sort of like, I don't even know how to explain it. It was just really simple. That's it. It was just birth, and it didn't hurt. And she came out into my arms. I couldn't lift her to my chest because the cord was so short. And I just remember thinking that was really weird. So I've never had that experience before. And that in and of itself was kind of disorienting, that I couldn't just immediately put her there. So I was just holding her and looking at her with her in my hands. And she had life force in the sense that her placenta was keeping her heart beating, but she was not coming to life, if that makes sense. She wasn't trying to breathe.
Her eyes were closed.
Her eyes were like fused shut, it appeared. She was there, but like not, if that makes sense. And looking back, I can feel now that she was on her way out in those few days before I gave birth, and she gifted us with a couple of moments of being with her, with that little tiny heartbeat for just a minute, you know? And we knew she was going to die, but like, there's something about that situation where you just have to try everything you can. And so Brandon was like, just try to give her breaths and see what happens, you know? And of course I know as I'm doing this, like, this isn't going to work, but I'm just doing that anyway, and rubbing her back and telling her how much we love her. And I checked that it was in fact a girl, and was just like so excited, which is so interesting how that is, because I knew she was also not going to stay with me, but I was still so excited that it was her. And I start telling her, like, if you really want to be here, call in every bit of you right now into this moment. Like, I don't know. I'm just like channeling this message to her. Like, give me a sign that you really want to be here. And I do feel like maybe in that moment, if she would have just like started to try to breathe or something, maybe I would have actually been like, let's go to the hospital. I can't. But.
Well, and we identified that as an important,
yeah,
I think, part of your story, that a baby born on her clear way out is extremely different than a baby born who is trying to live.
Totally.
They look different. They feel different. They act different. It's pretty darn obvious. And like you said, she never once even, it was clear she wasn't trying to move towards life.
Right.
And exactly like you said, you know, who knows? And that makes sense to me, that if you had a sense that she was trying to move towards life, of course you wouldn't have been like, nope, sorry.
Right.
You would have been like, okay, let's see what we can do to support that. But that wasn't this story.
Not at all. And later I went down this whole rabbit hole of 27 weakers in the NICU. and a lot of them can survive, but these babies come out crying at that gestation, which actually kind of surprised me. I was like, oh, some of them do come out and like gasp for air and are showing that they're really wanting to be here. And that was not her. So we're just being with her and crying. And actually, Brandon is crying way more than me. You know, those birth hormones just kind of are working their magic. And all I feel is peace. And that really does, that is a very good anchor point for me. I'm about 3.5 months out now from this experience, you know, and I've gone through so many waves of like, what ifs, should have, could haves, whatevers. And that moment of peace is something I return to a lot. It's like, I felt that. I felt peace. And that tells me a lot. Just like that feeling of peace during her birth and right after does show me that instinctually this was what was meant to be.
And when I think of peace, I think of alignment. You know, you have peace when you're in alignment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And my husband felt that too. He really felt like we aligned with our values, our truths, the foundations of our lives. And so he felt good about that. But of course, he was processing it more kind of immediately than I was. I was sort of in that birth haze, you know, and just taking her all in and just like trying as best as I could to hold her, but I couldn't take her up on my chest. So I was like, I just want to get this placenta out, you know? So I like tug a little bit on the cord and I birth the placenta pretty fast, probably within like 10 minutes. And we both looked at each other when the placenta came out and we were like, something's off with the placenta. Now later I examined it again. I sent pictures to you. I sent pictures to my elder midwife and none of us could really see anything wrong. But it's kind of interesting that both of us felt that. And we couldn't really articulate it, but we were like, huh, it just felt a bit off. It was a bit torn. Well,
I think you could be seeing something when you're actually there that doesn't translate to a photo.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, both of you are like shamanic, spiritual, like, you know, like you work in other realms. Like it makes sense to me that you saw something that, to me, it looked like just a regular placenta.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very peculiar. So anyway, we're like in the guest bathroom. With this dead
God,
baby.
I hate that.
So harsh, but I'm like,
what the fuck? Yeah. That's your parents' house. It's so weird.
So weird. Thank God I said, I want a picture of her. Like that's something I can say. And I know like anybody listening to this, if you're listening to this because you've probably already lost. Like, it's not like you're going to prepare for a loss, but something I definitely wish I had more of was photos. You know?
Oh yeah. Photos are an interesting one because the, as a attendant, if you like ask, they'll be like, no, like it's the most awkward, you know, aspect, but always take the pictures, always, always, always. And if you are a woman that ever deals with this and interfaces with this as your own or as an attendant, you know, the mother can always delete, but all those mementos of any kind, like anchor that baby to real life, you
totally.
Know, that she really existed.
Yeah, exactly. So I did snap a picture of her. And then I got Brandon to take a picture of me with her in my arms. And we went to the bed and, you know, it was kind of convenient. I gave birth in the bathtub. It was like super easy to clean up the blood. And I bled just like super fast. I just feel like my womb is just very efficient. And I was like, placenta out, baby out fast, placenta out, blood out. Okay, let's get in bed, you know? And I'm just there with her kind of on my chest. And at this point, I'm really in shock. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And Brandon's like, we need to go to sleep. And I'm like, yeah, but what are we going to do then? Like, we're going to wake up with the dead baby and be like, surprise, boys. Like, I don't know. It was just
so weird.
So weird.
So did she pass officially in the tub?
Yeah. So
like,
yeah.
Was there a sense of it was like, and now she's.
Yeah. So it was sort of like, you know, there was this like, let's try to give her breaths. And like, is she really gone fully? And then I put my thumb. I mean, this was like right after she was born. I put my thumb over her heart and I was like, okay, it is beating. But that was it. You know, she was totally limp. And she had a couple of reflexive movements at some point right after she came out. And then I just looked at, you know, Brandon and I said, she's dying. She's going to go. And he was like, okay. And then it was just shortly after that, that she did. And I really don't know how long. It wasn't long. Yeah. And that was it. So yeah. We got in the bed and we're like talking this over. And so we decide to spend a couple of hours with her before we wake people up. But I was ultimately like, I don't think we can wait till the morning. That's just going to be like really weird. Because then my parent, what I didn't want was that my parents were going to be in shock and grief and all that stuff. And that my boys were going to see that as like the first.
Yeah, the whole situation needs to be like managed.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I was like, why don't we first wake up my parents? We'll do the process with them. And then we'll wake up the boys. So after spending about 2 hours with her, just the two of us, Brandon went into my parents' room, and it was probably like 1 in the morning, maybe 2, I don't know, 1:30, and wakes them up. And yeah, he basically just told them what happened, and they came in and they were very shocked and very sad. And I mean, God, it must have just been so hard for them, you know? And I am just telling my dad, which is so kind of weird and funny looking back, but I'm like, let's not call anyone. Let's bury the baby in the backyard. And that's it. And I'm like, they could come and maybe try to take my kids away from me. Like, I didn't know. I just know how crazy the US can be. I don't live there anymore. I haven't in a very long time. I haven't lived in my own country in like 15 years. So if I were to be in Mexico, that's exactly what I would have done. Mm-hmm. I would have had my baby and I would have buried her in my garden. And it actually wouldn't have been a big deal. And my dad,
even at that gestation.
Even at that gestation. Like, we don't.
I mean, it's Mexico.
Mexico is, it's an interesting place.
Yeah.
Mexico very much respects death and very much respects the family as well. You know, and I'm going, I had a wild pregnancy. Nobody knows I'm pregnant. I'm passing through here. Yeah, I know. I know it sounds kind of crazy to you and whatever, but that's what's going on in my mind at that time. And my dad is like, I think you're in shock, honey. Like, you can't do that here. You have, like, there's just certain things we have to do here, Nancy. I'm really sorry, you know? And I'm like, and eventually I was able to hear him. And my mom's like, yeah, he's right. And eventually I was able to hear him. And I was like, oh, yeah. We're in, like, the Matrix. Like, you got to report stuff and, like, follow certain guns. Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know, in America, after 20 weeks gestation, it's considered, basically, for lack of a better phrase, a real baby. And so it would be... a death certificate would be required, and you can't bury a body willy-nilly.
Exactly.
You can't just bury a body anywhere. It needs to go through the proper, government-decided systems, which then really only give bereaved parents the option of a burial in a coffin with embalmment, which is pretty hardcore, or cremation. But that is actually something, you know, I think, and this is probably true in lots of first world countries. But people don't know that, you know, people don't know that you can't just bury a baby in the land. But yeah, after 20 weeks, that would not be legal in the US.
Yeah. So I'm starting to process all that. And he's like
just not being at your place, at your home, in your sacred home that you've built with such great intention, in your chambers where you do postpartum on your land. Like, that's just so weird with your parents, and what a bizarre layer to all of this.
It is such a bizarre layer. Yeah. And also, like, it's really fascinating.
Yeah.
What are the chances?
Sucks.
And what does that mean on like a very interesting family karmic kind of level? I really don't know. I'm still kind of receiving information about that, but I don't think it's random. I don't think it's random that Lila was born in my parents' home. It's just really interesting. But also it was totally disorienting and very hard for me, of course.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, okay, so then what do you do? And my mom's like, right. Yeah, what do you do? Like, who do you actually call? And so I think they ended up calling maybe like the fire station or something, just to be like, normally like the EMFs would come, but like the baby already passed. And then they're like, oh, they of course knew what to do. They're
EMTs.
like, sorry, EMF. Electromagnetic frequency.
Look, Nancy doesn't live in the Matrix, you guys,
That's
okay?
hilarious. That's really funny. EMTs. Okay, thanks for that correction. That was funny. They knew what to do. They were like, yeah, the EMTs have to come first, and then a policeman, and then a justice of the peace, and then a director of a funeral home. And the EMTs had two people, so that's five people. That five random strangers that show up.
How many hours after birth?
It was probably 3.5.
That's soon. And they
Yeah.
took Lila.
Okay, so I missed a part. So after I had told my parents what happened, and my parents had a bit of a process around that before they called people, we woke up our boys, which was a tough decision because they're like sleeping, you
It's so
know?
little.
Kids sleep so hard when they're that age.
Yeah.
But we were like, we want them to see her like this without all these people. So we had a family moment where the boys got to hold her. My mom did take some pictures of the boys holding her, so I'm grateful for that. And yeah, that was a whole moment. We just explained kind of what happened. And kids are curious. They're not judgmental. They're not like, oh, this is wrong. They're like,
No.
oh, this happened. I don't know. Like, okay, I have a sister that, and my husband was like, you have a sister now that's always in the stars watching over you. And we were kind of like helping them to process that. So then shortly after that, they did end up going back to bed. All these people arrived in our home. And now I just always want to call them the EMFs, but
Yeah.
the EMTs arrived. They were the first ones to arrive. And that was very annoying. They were like, what happened? And I basically just told them I felt like I needed to go to the bathroom, and her head was right there. Like, I just gave birth super fast, and she was already dead. Like, that was kind of what I said. And they're like, okay, we're gonna put you on the stretcher and get you into the hospital. And I'm like,
Fuck off.
no, you're not. And at
Yeah.
that point, I can register that I did have a bit of trauma there. I've had to work on that postpartum, because I definitely had like my tiger mom body come online. And that's not so ideal in the postpartum period, right? But I was like, no, this is not happening. I'm not about to make this situation 10 times worse. Like, it's already really bad that I have to process that my daughter didn't survive. I'm definitely not going to the hospital. That was very uncomfortable for my dad, because I don't think he really understood. I actually don't think he understands the depth of knowledge that I have around the postpartum period and how much I have studied. And I just know what's correct. And I would know when I need help, and I wouldn't hesitate to go get it if I really needed it. But I was just like, I'm good. Like, I birthed my placenta, I didn't hemorrhage, I'm fine. I told them, I am exactly where I need to be, in my bed, resting with my family, period. And they're like, okay, well, I'm gonna have to call somebody higher up, and like, you're gonna have to tell them, and I'm gonna have to record it, that you're saying that you're not gonna come and that we offered you, essentially, right? So we went through that whole process, and it was okay. And ultimately, they were like relatively friendly, I would say. I mean, one of the guys was annoying. He was making stupid jokes, and the younger one was like, shh, I want to hear what she has to say. Like, he was way more respectful. So that was kind of,
Jokes.
yeah. Like, he was like, oh, my wife's also a Gemini. Just like, because he had to ask her.
What?
I know. He had to ask for my date of birth, and he's like, oh, you better listen to what those Geminis say. I was like, dude, now is not the time to talk about astrology with me. Like, go
Weird.
away. So then comes the police officer. He was really kind, and he was just like, I have to ask these questions. And he basically just asked what happened. And I just told him, like, I birthed really, really fast. And it was just really, really fast. And that's it. That's the whole story. I don't know why. And he's like, did you have anything else in your pregnancy? I'm like, no, I felt great. So that was that. And then the Justice of Peace came and he had to get the information of her full name. And like without even hesitating, I was like, Lila Jewel is her name. And I didn't even talk to Brandon about it. And he was like, oh, okay. Yeah, it's Lila. Like I was like, of course it's Lila. Like we've been waiting for her and she came. Her name means essentially jewel in the night sky because Lila means the night, you know? And so we kind of see her as the star. It's like almost like all of it was already written in her name. Like we see her as the star watching over us, and that's what her name means. And then the funeral home director came in and he was basically like, I have to take the body at some point, but just take whatever time you need. I have a regret here, Emily. I wish I would have done that. I really wish I would have taken a moment and looked at every single detail of her body for like a while. Because that's something that I really craved later when the grief hit like super hard. I was like, I want my physical baby here, you know? And I was like, God, I didn't even really like fully take her in the way that I could have. There was something that just felt a bit like I felt kind of almost disembodied in those moments. And I was just like, she's not here. She's gone. Like, I think I'm done with her body, you know? And I wish somebody would have been there to tell me, just really take some more time.
There's no
But
rush.
I know. But I didn't. And I just felt like, well, she's not here. It's just like a cold body, which was so kind of weird. So eventually they take the body. And then all the process of grieving starts. It's so deep. It's so big. It's the biggest thing I've ever experienced in my life. And I've experienced a lot of big things. It's so hard. It's like, wow, the depth of love that mothers have for their children, it's something else. And I don't know. I guess I should just keep going with the story and can weave in just some things that have helped me, you know, for anyone who listening who might have experienced loss themselves. The most helpful has been two things, I think, like one, community support. So, you know, then I'm texting you, I'm texting my elder midwife and Kristen. Those were like you guys were my three touch points. So now we're like processing this together. So at least I have that comfort of wise women holding me, you know, especially when I'm not in my home. The craziest part is my elder midwife had almost an identical story of going to the US at 26 weeks pregnant with her fourth baby when she was 40, and her waters broke and her baby died. And I'm like, I can't believe I never knew that story about you. And she's like, yeah, I don't talk about it much with people, but she had so much to offer me because she had actually
Nice.
been through it. So that was really helpful. And so there's been the community support, and then the second biggest piece for me has been ceremony and ritual and like really learning how to mark important points along the way. Marked a lot of them. So the first thing that we did was work with the placenta. My parents took the boys out of the house one day. It was like 2 days after birth. I just popped the placenta in the freezer because I sort of didn't really know what to do. I was like in my parents' house. I didn't know how they'd feel about having a placenta sitting in the fridge or like lying around in any capacity. So I was like, okay, I'm just gonna pop it in the freezer and like figure that out in a bit. So they left with the boys one day. I think it was like 2 days postpartum. We made some cacao. I had brought some ceremonial cacao with us. We made a cup of cacao and we did like a whole placenta ceremony. So we let it thaw. We made placenta prints. We examined it really thoroughly. We talked about what we saw in the placenta and like wrote it down, like kind of did a reading of it. And something super magical happened during that time. As soon as I got the placenta out and as soon as my hands touched it, a song came on, a random Spotify playlist. And Brandon had pulled up a picture of Lila, the only picture I had taken. And he was looking at it. And I had my hands on the placenta. And the lyrics said something to the effect of, when a physical body is no longer compatible with the mission of the soul chooses to leave. And this is what we call death. And we just look at each other and we're both crying. And I'm like, did you put this song on? And he's just like, no, I did not put this song on. I had never heard that song in my life.
No, the EMFs put it on.
Exactly. And so there were these signs along the way like that, right? Like, I'm like, she's talking to us. She's okay. And that this was her path.
Do you remember the name of that song?
It's called Immortality. And I don't remember who sings it. It starts with a D. But you can find it on Spotify on these like spiritual playlists, you know? So we did a little like placenta ceremony, and then the funeral home calls me and is like, what do you want to do with the body? And we have to decide if we're going to cremate, if we're going to try to get the body across to Mexico. Getting the body across to Mexico was very complicated. I didn't like the idea of embalming in the coffin and that whole thing. Anything like she did, which she didn't. So we decided for a cremation because he's like, it's very easy. You can put the ashes in your purse.
Yeah.
So that was another like mini kind of ceremony we did because they were so kind at that funeral home, and they basically didn't even charge us anything. Like most of the fees are waived for infant deaths. And so he said, if you want, you can come at the moment of cremation or like right before if you want to do anything special. Now, in my normal postpartum, I would never think about leaving the house on like day three, but I'm like, this is not normal. And I'm going because I want to pray over her body. And we didn't realize that it was actually like kind of a proper service that they had set up for us. Like they had actually embalmed her body and tried to make her look super nice. I know.
Oh, you saw her?
Yeah. And I didn't know I was going to.
Whoa, Nancy, I didn't know this part.
Yeah. It's super weird. I thought,
why would they have embalmed her for cremation?
They were actually trying to do it out of kindness because they wanted to give me like a proper service
without telling you, though.
It was kind of odd, but like I have no experience in these realms, so I was like, okay. And we were just sort of, oh, she's gonna be behind walls like in a morgue and we're just gonna be praying out here while she's being cremated. That was sort of what I had. We get in and it's like this beautiful music playing in this sort of funeral home, like with a proper, a little
and you saw her.
And I'm like, oh, she's there. And I was like, I don't think I want to look at her because I want to remember her how she was. But then my mom went looked at her, and my mom came back and she said, she's beautiful. She's really beautiful. I know. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go look. And I looked and she really didn't look the same.
Yeah.
Like really at all. So it was kind of weird.
Yeah.
But it was like so sweet as well that they did this thing. And my boys were obsessed. They were just like touching her hair and like looking at her. And so we had prepared a set of prayers and songs to sing for her. So we did that with just my parents. And I asked my parents to also say prayers. So they did their own prayers. And then we said goodbye to the body and they cremated her. I'm just trying to think of these like mini touch points, right, of ceremony. And that was like kind of a weird one because it was just so not what I was expecting, nor was I super prepared, but I felt good about just saying those prayers over her body. And
totally.
I was kind of imagining the sacred fire, like transforming her body, you know, because we work with the sacred fire. So then we start to make our way out of Texas. I was sort of like, it was sort of both, right? I wanted to rest as much as I possibly could, but I also just really wanted to be home.
Get home. Oh my God.
Yeah. And then my milk started coming in. That was so crazy. It was weird, Emily. It just kind of surprised me in a weird way. Like my you know, my midwife elder wrote me and was like, just remember the milk's about to come in. And I was like, what is she talking about?
Yeah, like a whole nother thing to think
so
about.
Unfair.
Yeah.
Why would my body do that? Like it was, but then of course the sort of birth worker side of me was like, duh. Of course your milk's gonna come in. But it was pretty emotional. And you know, another thing I kind of have regret of is like not really taking my time with that choice of I wanna stretch this out a bit. I basically just asked my dad to go get me a hand pump. And I wanted to just get as little out as I could so that it didn't hurt, but I wasn't interested in keeping it going. I was just like, dry this up, like move on from this. Sure. I just had this kind of harshness with it, which is kind of strange looking back. I'm not really sure what that was about. It just didn't feel useful, you know?
Really?
And I was
think
like,
that's a very common, normal response.
Yeah, and I was not in the headspace to like try to donate it. I was not in my home around my people I knew and all my contacts. I was just like, oh, I just want to get home and I don't want to be dripping milk or like having mastitis on the airplane, you know? So I took a bunch of sage tea and I got my mom to pick up some tincture for me and that helped dry it up. I did pump a little bit and like gave some to each of the boys and Brandon and we all kind of had some. I would have died to have a toddler still nursing at that phase.
Oh.
Like to have a live baby, you know, and this is something I've talked about in my journey is like, what would loss have looked like way back in the day when we were living more in community and there would have been babies around because there were always babies around in community like that. Could I have nursed a live baby? You know, would
you mean someone else's?
Yeah, like would a mother let me do that? Would I have the guts?
Would
to
a toddler have been down with that though? That's the question I wonder.
No, not a toddler, like a baby.
A baby baby.
Yeah, like more of a baby baby. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe you would even encounter a woman who didn't produce enough
milk.
Needed
help, yeah.
So because that feeling of just the intense desire to have to complete that physiological loop. That is pure hell. At one point, Emily, I felt like, and I think I've shared this with you, but I felt like someone was scraping hot coals over my soul. Like that's how it hurt. You know, that's how much it hurt. When the news really started to land more. So anyway, we stay at my parents' for only a week. And we decide to rush out because a hurricane started coming. Can you believe that? We had to evacuate. Like my parents were like, well, either you're going to hunker down here with us. And they usually fare pretty well where they are. But like put on the generator and all the things or you're going to get out. And we got out on like literally the last flight we could to go home after about a week's time. My parents, you know, they took really good care of me and made me a bunch of meals and tried to entertain the boys as much as they could. And I tried to rest as much as I could. But by that point in my experience, I was going more down the rabbit holes of sort of, should I have done something differently? You know? And I remember processing that with you. And you were basically like, you got to turn over every stone in your mind until there's like nothing to turn over. It's interesting because Brandon didn't go through that at all. He was just like, I know we did the right thing. And that's it. Like he just was so clear the whole time, which was actually really helpful and beautiful because I could just lean on that. But in those first days, I was just obsessing over what would her NICU stay have looked like? Mm-hmm. What's her chance of being here still? Mm-hmm. What was wrong with my placenta, if anything? What did I do to kill her? Like I actually went there. And I later started to understand that I think that's actually pretty normal because we as mothers, especially in those early months, they are dependent on us for their survival. And like, of course, you're gonna go to a place in your mind at some point that things I must have done something, you know, and I think that's really common with
Well,
lost
and it's
moms.
a survival mode of how can I make sure this doesn't happen again? So like what's here for me to figure out, even though there really is usually nothing to figure out, but you have a part of your brain needs to see if you can prevent it. You need to understand why it happened, not just like who's to blame, but bigger than that. Like how do I make sure this doesn't happen again? Don't you think?
Totally.
On some level.
So I did that and I did that and I did that some more. And then eventually, and I cried and I sobbed and I, you know, I did feel a little bit like a caged animal being not in my home.
Oh my God.
You know, like, I wanted more like full expression and not like anybody in particular was holding me back, but it was just this feeling of like, home. So eventually we got home and there were beautiful gifts on my table of like notes from my community and flowers and a basket of fruits. And my neighbor had made me food. And so it was this amazing welcome.
Nice.
And I saw this beautiful dragonfly like as soon as I came in. I just felt like I kept seeing Lila everywhere. Eventually, we did a memorial kind of service for her that I asked my elder midwife to lead for me. That was so beautiful. I did a traditional 40-day lie-in. I mean, obviously I'd like left my bed for flying and, you know, things I didn't want to leave my bed for, like going to the funeral home. But as soon as I got home, I just got straight back in bed. I called one of my other elders who does a lot of postpartum support. And she basically came and lived with us for a couple of weeks and was just doing all kinds of treatments on me and massages and spiritual treatments. And she was like, you left your body, like you are in total shock. She gave me all these like weird indigenous herb mixes that tasted super weird for specifically for shock and for bringing yourself back in. And she was absolutely right. And I can say for every piece of me that had started to land in my body, I just felt the pain more and more, you know? So it's kind of weird. Like the closer you are to the portal, in some ways, the harder it is. But then the further away you get, it also gets like harder in other ways, if that makes sense. Cause it just keeps landing. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, this is real.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is real. And, you know, all I can say are these moments of ritual and ceremony. And I did the closing of the bones. And then I had an actual funeral for her where we buried her ashes. We made like a little kind of shrine. I passed my due date and I buried my placenta powder because I ended up processing it at my parents and drying it so that I'd have something to take home. You know, so there's been a lot of moments and I've honored them as much as I possibly could. And I've honored them ideally with community around me, because I think in that process of being witnessed, there's also a transmission that takes place, right? From the people that are witnessing you, they're saying, we're seeing you go through this and you're still here and you're strong. And do you see that you're taking another step forward?
Yeah.
You know, and you've done that with me through various talks that we've had, and it's really important. You can't grieve totally alone. There's something so unnatural about that, mm-hmm. you know.
And so how society is set up to do it, which is part of why most people only know super dysfunctional grief.
Yes. And I can just say, because I want to just get this out there as much as I can to the collective, nobody knows what to say, and that's okay. But not saying anything is the absolute worst.
It's so like bizarre.
For me, when I've gone out in public, especially like right after the postpartum period, when I started to leave and I saw people who knew I was pregnant and now they can see I'm not pregnant and nor do I have a baby and they don't say anything. Talk about like a knife in the heart. Yeah, because that's something that lost moms really feel like we want you to know that our babies existed.
Obviously for that person, like, okay, what is she supposed to say? Oh, you're not pregnant anymore. Where's your baby? And then you would be like, she died. And then she would be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And then you would be like, me too. And then that is better. Like that is probably the exchange on average that would occur. And like people, you know, the person who's lost, who has lost, I'm not saying you, but like a lot of people feel like, oh, I don't want to make anyone uncomfortable. And then the other person is like, elephant in the room, I'm not going to name it because I don't want to make it worse for the mother to make her talk about it. So both people are like isolating and there's no actual connection, love transmitting between the two. And actually to go, wait, you were pregnant. And there's this whole thing that's like, that's too personal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so, again, dysfunctional. It's like the perfect word for it.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it's very bizarre and isolating. And like anyone listening to this podcast surely knows that. You know, Shirley has been tuned into how isolating, you know, the world is around death. Not everywhere, I guess, but it's better to be awkward, I guess, is what we're saying. It's better to be awkward.
Better to be awkward because
and lead with love.
Yeah, because I can guarantee you that mom is thinking about that baby
all the time.
All the time.
I mean, that doesn't mean every single mom does want to talk about it to the random guy who lives four houses down.
Right.
So it is a toss-up because, you know, yeah, you actually don't want everyone to mention it. Not everyone. You know, there's going to be times and people in the grocery store to like, just leave me alone. But there is an overall acknowledgement. And obviously, mostly women listen to this. So, you know, we need to all get out of our comfort zones and lead with love.
Yeah.
Duh, always about everything.
Yeah.
So 3.5 months out. I mean, you seem a lot more in your body now.
I think I am.
You definitely are. I feel
it. I have gone through it so much, Emily. I want to just say, I really do believe in German new medicine now because I had insane gut health issues. That started basically when I started to come back to my body, maybe 2-3 weeks postpartum. Bad, I'm going to spare you the details, really uncomfortable gut health stuff. Did some parasite cleanse stuff, did this and that thing, did all the things. And then I got to my due date, which just passed. And like a miracle, they're resolved. It's just really interesting. Like for me, it was completely emotional. And I was like, okay, I'm starting to get initiated into this a little more. Yeah. So that's been tough, obviously, because it's like on top of the grief, I don't want to be feeling horrible physically.
Mm-hmm.
So I can say like right now in this moment, I am doing a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing better and I feel hope again. You know, I felt pretty crushed there for a while. Like, I feel like losing a baby, it's just so disorienting because my whole orientation was we're doing this. We're having this baby. I'm going to be nursing and co-sleeping, and I'm going to be sort of pausing my work for a bit. And now what am I doing? You know, and I'm slowly starting to find my orientation again, just as me. I'm like, okay, well, what do I want to do now? You know, it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're a little shooting star.
Yeah. I got this gorgeous necklace made as a way to keep some of her ashes here.
Nice.
It's like a little star.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
That's another thing you can do, you know, like, get something special made for yourself, like reminding yourself, yeah, how strong you are and that they're always with you. And
so some of her ashes are actually in that necklace.
Yeah.
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 There's a friend of mine does breast milk jewelry. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's interesting.
That's another thing you can do. Yeah.
Anything else you want to say before we close?
Yeah. I don't know. There's so much one can say. I really just want to hone in on that. Like if you have gone through this or going through it right now, ask for community to witness you as much as you can, even if it's just like, I've made friends with so many lost moms online that I've never even met in person. And we write each other like we're having a bad day today. Can you say a prayer for me? Can you light a candle for my baby? And it goes a long way to speak to people, especially those who have experience with it. And also just letting yourself mark these different transitions, and it's never too late. And there's going to be like a million ways we can do it, right? The date that they were born, every month you could do something, their birthdays, your due date if you didn't get to it, you know.
Maybe you could speak before we close on the journey of okay, well, these will be my words and then you can kind of fix it. But the journey of going in and out of feeling victimized by this, and it's so unfair, and why me, right? And like very normal parts of the process, and kind of this overarching decision to, and again, I'm kind of like making this up, so you can say it however you want, but this overarching decision ultimately to embrace this and to allow it and to, like, I'm not saying you do this every second of every day, but you are certainly moving towards integration and allowing and seeing what's all here for you and the spiritual lessons that are here for your family. And you know what I'm saying? Like, it would be so conceivable to stay in a really maybe stuck, why me, God hates me place. Mm-hmm. And you aren't staying stuck there, though perhaps you've had your own battle with it.
Right. Totally. Oh yeah. I think really what's helped is just allowing myself to fully go into that when it has come up, when I want to feel like a victim. And actually for me personally, it comes out most often in the form of anger. So I think what's really helped me is actually just letting myself go into those victim places when they've come up. And for me, that's happened a lot in the form of anger and just really allowing myself to be kind of angry at the world. I think I was telling you, right? I took that full moon walk one day and it was like a full moon eclipse. And I was just like, I hate you, moon. And I hate you, everybody. You know, and I was just walking very briskly and just cursing everything and everyone. And of course, like as I'm doing that, there's a background awareness of the observer, you know, and there's always the observer who's there with us. And that's really helped me a lot, as leaning on those practices that I've had in the past of being able to access that higher part of me. That's not higher in a way that it's better. It's just like there to watch and observe. And another thing that's really helped me a lot with the victimhood place is to try as best as I can to stay out of supposed to's or should's.
Yeah.
Like even when it comes to, okay, so I just recently passed my due date and there was this feeling inside of me of like, I should be pregnant right now still, or I should be giving birth or on the cusp of giving birth. But I'm like, no, I'm not.
That was only what is.
Exactly. There's only what is. And actually that has helped me so much. And I know that a lot of lost moms do that a lot. Like, oh, she would be 3 months old right now. Oh, she'd be 1 year old. Oh, she'd
torture.
Be, you know, yeah, exactly. And what I arrived to was like, that actually is torturing myself if I do that.
Yeah.
So I decided pretty early on that I was going to stay out of that zone. And so now Lila doesn't exist for me in a kind of future memory way, or however you would word that, of like, oh, she would be approaching 4 months old now, or whatever it is. Like, she doesn't exist for me in that way.
Yeah.
She exists for me as how she is, which is cosmic, spirit, the shooting star, you know, all the different little symbols that she's come to us as. And that's it. Mm-hmm. And that's enough. And that's a lot. And that's actually pretty epic. And mothering, you actually are still a mother. I'm always going to be a mother of four. Even if she's not here with me earthside, I mother her in a different way. We have a different relationship. You know, I believe that she'll always be talking to me, through me, and a part of me. But if she was supposed to be here, she would be here with me right now.
Right.
So I hope that's helpful for someone out there.
I'm sure it is. I love you.
I love you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your willingness to share in this way. And yeah, beautifully told.
Thank you. Thanks for hearing my story.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below. And of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of Sovereign Birth. Don't forget, you can watch our podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you'll also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel. We've always got a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out all about it at freebirthsociety.com, at Free Birth Society on Instagram, and opt in to my newsletter below. We offer courses on free birth, authentic midwifery, the blood mysteries, as well as one-on-one coaching, in-person retreats, and of course our annual women's gathering, the Matriarch Rising Festival. Our exclusive private vetted membership, The Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you're looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories, fully claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. I'll leave you with our gorgeous Free Birth Society theme song, Wild Woman by Aruba Red.
I honor you for the wisdom you held, the ancient traditions of plant medicine and womb magic. I feel the spirit of the ancestors as I place my hands upon my belly. This sacred portal will be honored. Eons upon light beams of survival, withstanding the eradication of our power by design. I will not allow the separation of our young to be forced upon me. My sisters will no longer birth in captivity. The picket line redefined from burning our wild women to paralyzing us and drugging our babes. Strapped down in a clinical white bed, drying up the milk from our breasts, keep your needles. My family will never again be doomed to chase those dragons or your poison. We reject your fear. We choose love. Everything with intention, death, ascension. I will fly and bring her back from the stars.